the name of the values that keep you alive, do not let your vision of man be distorted by the ugly, the cowardly, the mindless, and those who have never achieved his title. Do not lose your knowledge that man's proper estate is an upright posture, an intransigent mind, and a step that travels unlimited roads. Do not let your fire go out, sparked by replacing the spark in the hope the swamps of the approximate are not quite, the not yet, the not at all. The world you desired can be won. It exists. It is real. It is possible. It's yours.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Crypto Economy Podcast. So today we're here at the Crypto Invest Summit, and we're currently at the Key Influencer Dinner just down the street. So we're going to be talking to a few key influencers and interesting folks that are dropping by throughout the evening. And I wanted to get us started off here by talking to one of our first guests. So I wanted to ask first, what have you sort of seen at the Invest Summit, and also what is this dinner and how are you a part of it?
Yeah, so Crypto Invest Summit, definitely a great event so far. Seen a lot of people, you know, really implementing the whole AI aspect of blockchain and, you know, trying to integrate that into everyday blockchain solutions. You know, met definitely a lot of interesting people, and it's just cool to kind of see, you know, the perspective of, you know, different quote-unquote influencers in the space and quote-unquote OGs, definitely hearing their perspective on, you know, the current state of blockchain and where we're headed as an industry. So really just all the synergies at the event were amazing. Lots of great people, like I said. And yeah, I'm really excited for the future of this industry.
What was the most interesting thing that you've seen so far?
The guy was walking around with his big color board. And I've seen him at a few events, and he was talking about it being an actual wallet, just the colors and the different, you know, pattern of the colors, and they're all primary colors and stuff. And now he's talking about creating an actual Vegas casino style place that's integrating blockchain technology into gambling. And it's definitely a very interesting concept, just the way he's presenting it to people. But, you know, it's kind of a humorous thing, but also, you know, in terms of interesting projects, I mean, seen a lot of people, you know, integrating like chats with blockchain. And, you know, since the company, they've got a good approach on, you know, kind of like keeping people's data secure in terms of chats. So instead of like Facebook Messenger stealing all your information, you're actually chatting peer-to-peer, and that's how it's going to be. So
the decentralized internet trust starting to come together with some of these dApps. That's interesting. So for this dinner, who are some of the people you expect to see coming through? What are their backgrounds, and what is the purpose of the dinner itself?
Yeah, so we'll start with the purpose. I mean, really, you know, the reason we throw these is to just bring people under the same roof. We're all, you know, here for the same reason. We want to see blockchain being used throughout the world. So really, it's all about, you know, coming together and just having little masterminds like this where people are able to meet each other. And, you know, who doesn't enjoy some good food? You know, good food brings people together, and, you know, so we're really good about curating an audience mostly comprised of crypto whales and key influencers in the space. But, you know, also a lot of crypto guppies attend, people just looking to learn about blockchain and, you know, how they can get involved or just learn about it in general and what the future of blockchain might look like for them. So it's just a good experience for anyone in general to, you know, come by, get a little taste of blockchain, potentially, you know, win some crypto tokens in the process and eat some good food.
Yeah. So who are some of the people who you've been most excited to see come through? Some of these whales that you talk about, or some of the companies that they might represent? Maybe you don't have to name names, but what are some of the big companies and projects that make their way through these dinners?
Definitely, you know, some of the original people that were spreading the word about crypto have taken a lot of interest in what we're doing. And, you know, a lot of them have expressed their, you know, support in us just through, you know, referring different companies our way as sponsors and, you know, by attending our events and also putting out a good word, whether it's on their websites, whether it's in their email blasts. And yeah, it's just cool to see, you know, us making an impact in the crypto space in a positive way just by bringing people together and, you know, kind of just synergizing and sharing ideas.
So who is hosting these events, and how can people get involved who might be interested in getting involved?
So Crypto Dinner Club was originally started by Chris Champion, who is the total crypto boss. He's one of the quote unquote OGs, totally killing the game. Chris does lots of fundraising for companies. He's raised over $300 million for just several different companies, and just super great guy all around. But He's the founder of Crypto Dinner Club, and he's the one who is in charge of, you know, deciding where we're going to throw events and stuff like that. And then that's where people like me come in and just make sure, you know, we get the audience there, we get the sponsorships, and yeah, I got to make sure, you know, we have chocolate covered strawberries.
That's a must. So where are some of these events going to be held in the near future?
Yeah, so we have, you know, of course, the LA Key Influencer event tonight. On the 28th, we'll be heading to Puerto Rico for Restart South. We're the official opening dinner of that. In case you were wondering, Restart South has brought Pierce's event down there. And then November 5th, we'll actually be in Austin, Texas. November 10th will be our flagship dinner, which is a dinner we're hosting at NASDAQ. And then November 10th will be in Tokyo, Japan. And those are just the ones, you know, coming up in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So, but yeah, we'll have a lot of dinners in the States and also in Asia. So,
awesome. Well, I'm excited to see where those go, and hopefully I can attend a couple more. So thanks for dropping by, and we're going to be talking to a lot of interesting people as the night goes on. So stay tuned. All right, we're back with our second segment here. We're here with Sarah Austin, who's the co-founder and CMO of the Soma Open Network, which is a messaging platform. And so we're going to get started with a little bit of background about the company. So thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. And I'll tell you a little bit about the background of the company. Soma is a messaging platform and social media application that's on Android and iPhones. And we grew to success and user base through telling people to get off of WhatsApp. Now, this became particularly impactful when the UAE told all of their users they have to get off WhatsApp because they banned WhatsApp in the region. And we took advantage of this through our marketing, and we pushed Soma as a replacement. It worked. Within that month, we gained 10 million users.
Oh, that's no joke.
Yes. And then from there, it grew. So at that point, it became word-of-mouth marketing, and it was just completely organic. We did very little marketing. We just got lucky, and now we have 85 million users. We have a very engaged daily active user base at 6 million daily active users. And, you know, I have to say thank you to Facebook for the success of my application in terms of user base. And I also have to say thank you to Mark Zuckerberg's sister, Brandi Zuckerberg, for making me famous when she put me on a reality TV show on Bravo called Startup Silicon Valley.
Oh.
Yeah. So first, Mark's sister made me famous through, you know, funding this Bravo TV show about startups in Silicon Valley. And then Facebook, who's the owner of WhatsApp, made me my app famous when they kicked out WhatsApp.
They've been good
to you.
They
banned them. Yeah, so I have to say thanks to Facebook.
That's awesome. So what
for sucking?
I mean, I'm glad someone's thankful for Facebook, because it seems like not a lot of people around these parts are. So what would you say makes Soma different from a WhatsApp or a Facebook Messenger?
We care about your data, and we're not going to violate your data rights. You know, everything is being owned. I mean, your heart rate, how many steps you're taking, how many breaths you're taking every day, this is all being tracked on your phone. You know, it's not just the conversations that you're having with your voice calls and your text messages. And, you know, that they're taking your data, selling your data, making you watch ads and profiting off of you, but they're not paying the users anything. But it's also all of your bodily information, you know, it's kind of creepy. Like, I want to own my data. And I think that just as a user of Soma, you know, I value when using Soma over using WhatsApp. Like, I don't want to make phone calls to people on WhatsApp because I don't know what kind of conversations we're going to have, and I just want to protect my information.
Yeah, I mean, they found more spyware in Facebook Messenger than they found in some CIA spy tools. So, I mean, it's pretty crazy when you look at what they've done and how sophisticated it's become. So what do you do with the user's data? Do you just delete it? Do you keep it on their phone?
We don't store it. Yeah, okay. We don't even store it.
Okay, so, I mean, that's good to know for users. So what would you like to tell users about the platform? And I know you mentioned there were some people who had made mistakes with ICOs in the past. So what's your message for people starting new companies, starting new ICOs, and also users who are interested in the platform?
Okay, so yeah, so for the first question, we do have encrypted messages. And for the second question, what was the second question?
No worries. you talked a little bit before we started about how 2017 was the year of the ICO, and now we're in the year of the DAP. So what do you think is...
No. Okay, I said, yeah, so yeah, it's our
conversation. Do it in your own words, please. Yeah.
So the 2017 comment was, 2017 was the year of the ICO. 2018 is the year of realizing the mistake, the STO, and 2019 will be the year of the DApps.
Okay.
Yeah, and so in terms of what we're announcing with DApps is that the Soma Open Network is now available for DApps. So just like Facebook opened up third-party application developers, we're focused on decentralized applications because we see cryptocurrencies and blockchain as the future, and we want to make this part of our application blockchain-based. And, you know, while it is a messaging system and is centralized, it's also partly decentralized. So it's both centralized and decentralized, but we're really leaning into the decentralized part as the future of our development, and we have announced our design thinking plans for how we're rolling out the onboarding process of DApps. And what we're looking at is what's called TCR. It's called a token curated registry, where the users can use crypto to vote for the apps that they like and for the apps that they don't like, or maybe they find offensive, to vote them off. So in this sense, we are a decentralized model.
So creating a governance system for the token holders so that they have ownership of the network.
Exactly. And ownership in mining.
Oh, and that's an interesting point, because a lot of people haven't talked about mining. So what is your model for mining? Have you opened it up to everyone? Are there certain people you're targeting for that?
So on the app, there are mining features. So anyone who has the app can start clicking to mine. And then we also have airdrop features. So you can receive some of our Seeds token. And we just announced the Seeds token this year and rolled out our crypto wallet. So you can, I'll actually give out your listeners some free, you want my code?
Yeah, okay. Do it. We'll definitely include it in the description too.
Okay. So it's AI, like artificial intelligence, 8C35. So if you download Soma, you're a new user and you want to get some Seeds, I hook you up.
All right.
I got you back.
We're trying to look out for you guys. So that's great. So that's one of the best ways for people to get tokens. What are some other ways people might be able to get involved and get some tokens?
Well, they can mine. They can watch ads. They can get paid out for the time that they spend watching ads. So, you know, if you want to enjoy some advertisements.
Got some free time.
Help yourself. You can click for gold, and you can send money to your friends. I shouldn't say money. I should say cryptocurrency. You can send our token to your friends.
And so are there any exciting new apps that are coming onto the platform that you can talk about yet that users might be able to vote for?
So I can't talk about the apps in terms of naming them, but I can talk about the games. There actually are some entertaining dApps out there in the gaming space. And I've played some of them, and they've got great graphics and great game theory, and I find them really entertaining. You know, stuff from car racing to cards, playing cards, and you know, just kind of the Mario Brothers type of games. Uh-huh. Like, I'll find myself playing them if I'm bored, and they can be quite addictive, actually. So if that's something that you're into, then yeah, I think that you'll enjoy the dApps coming out in the entertainment and gaming space.
Great. I mean, is there anything else you wanted to summarize with? Any parting messages or anything we haven't gotten to?
Yeah, sure. Just that we really care about women empowerment, and we want to increase our user base with women, and so we're focused as well on providing more features focused towards our women audience, and particularly in the Middle East. I think that there's great potential for women empowerment using these crypto features, figuring out how to diversify a portfolio and making investments. You know, you vote with your wallet, and when you have more money in your wallet, you have more power, you have more of a voice. So I hope to bring more of a voice to women in the Middle East.
Yeah, making all these things accessible just makes people more free to make their own decisions.
Yep. You're right about that, my friend.
Well, thank you so much for being here, and thanks for listening, guys. We'll bring you another one shortly. Hey, guys. I'm here with Alexandra Karpova. She is the CEO and founder of Crypto PR Lab, and she's one of the speakers at the Crypto Invest Summit. So thank you so much for being here.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for inviting me. Yeah, I am a founder of Crypto PR Lab. We are a boutique PR agency focusing on blockchain and crypto, and we worked with a lot of interesting projects. Some of them are DeSeco, which is a platform for issuing and tokenized securities. We also work with Crypto Invest Summit, helping them with PR and ticket sales, Futurama, work with World CryptoCon, and many other amazing projects and conferences. So very happy to be here.
So what are some of the things you've noticed in the PR industry that have changed in respect to crypto in the last year or so?
Yeah. First of all, you know, we're kind of entered in a little bit of a bear market. So the rates that you see that PR agency charge and all the consulting agency charge, they can definitely changed. And there's a lot of, I see a little bit of skepticism about PR. I see some of the companies that has been born and created during this process, they haven't delivered. And we decided that we need to change that. So me and my co-founder, Masha, we realized there's a lot of missing gaps in good, solid PR agencies in the space that focus on creating solid content and publishing it, not in the paid or random media in unknown media spaces that nobody knows about. We actually work with one of the top writers in the space, who work with other top outlets, media outlets in the space, and we really focus on quality and delivering to our clients to their liking and building a solid strategy, as opposed to just writing random articles some of the other PR agencies do. So we take a big pride in how we serve and our clients and how we deliver products.
And so that was one thing we did. We had a news site and we had lots of people approaching us to pay us to write articles. So how do you differentiate yourself from some of the smaller PR firms, I guess, that are just sort of spewing out whatever publications they can get published? So how do you work with major publications to make sure the quality is up to par, while also making sure your clients are getting, you know, the right PR for what they need?
Absolutely. So first of all, I would never take any paid media. None of the solid reporters and journalists in the space are not allowed to take any money for it. So we never do that, because it basically validates the ethics of journalism, and we are all for real and solid journalism. I think it's extremely important. What we do, we create strategy for our clients. We don't just tell them right away, oh, we take this much money from you guys and we'll put you in Forbes or whatever you want to be. No, we don't do that. We create organic growth for our clients. We start you off, you're super new, you don't have much exposure. We start you off a little lower, we get your news, we get you out there. We're starting slow but organically. Once you become more famous, once you become ready for tier one, we'll put you in tier one. And we always make sure that it's organic in a way that journalists reach out to you because you're out there and we create a lot of buzz. So they want to write about you, as opposed to us going after them and pitching them our news. So that's extreme. It's a big difference between when you made it and you start getting a lot of organic exposure by real reporters and journalists, as opposed to just like paying everybody whatever they're asking. And it's super obvious when it's done. Or some of the PR agency that I noticed, they just write some one press release and they just copy and paste it all over the media. It's just like one article without a change. We don't do that. We always create content. We want our writers to think and really learn about your product and really create an article that makes sense and that's interesting to the readers. And I think that's extremely important to have a real organic PR for your project. And all of those shortcuts, they will really backfire to the projects, to the writers, and we're against that. We always promote organic growth and solid exposure from your projects to the world.
And so, you know, from the world is a key statement. So geographically, where are most of your clients located, and how do you tailor your services based on the markets that they're in and the markets they're trying to penetrate on a worldwide basis?
Absolutely. Our clients are pretty international. We have clients from the United States, from New York, from San Francisco. We have clients in Switzerland, Lithuania. We have in some Asia, in China. And it really depends a lot. So one of the biggest markets for PR we found is everybody wants to have international exposure through American media, such as famous tier one as NASDAQ or Forbes or Entrepreneur or Yahoo, Business Insider, Yahoo Finance. It's all American media in a way. So most of our project approaches specifically because we're very strong in U.S. media. We're also very strong in European media, and we do partner with a PR agency that works in Asia. So we are basically tailor a PR and the way that media works and appetite for media based on the region. But we're very international, and we can definitely take clients from all over.
And so do you focus really on traditional media, or is there some emphasis on social media and other sorts of advertising? How do you balance that as far as the importance of it?
Absolutely. We actually have two very solid partners. One of our partners is Day One Venture. Day One Productions. So they are focusing on, it's a production company focusing on creating visual content for projects. They create beautiful videos with interviews, and it's a very effective way of telling the story, what the project is, meeting the founders, seeing them, hearing their story, how did they get there, what are their goals. It has a much better effect just sometimes reading an article, because all of us have different ways of learning. Somebody listens, somebody reads, somebody has visual memories. So we try to do it all together. So once we create that video, we also PR the video as well. Like I said, we also write articles and distribute in traditional PR, and we also partner with a community management company called Mazi. Basically, we also work on the social media aspect, the Twitter, the Reddit, the Telegram side. So all of it combined, we want to make sure you have maximum exposure with all sorts of angles.
Full service, yeah.
Exactly, full
That's
service.
That's important, yeah. So what are some of the biggest pitfalls you've seen with other PR agencies in the market where they really haven't been getting it right, in your opinion?
I think a lot of them just, I feel like, don't listen to the client, what the client really wants. And I've seen some really poorly written press releases and articles, and just like very poor job, not really expressing what the client is really talking about, what their goals, what their inspiration. Some articles are just really boring. I think it's extremely important to bring the best out of the project, deliver it to the world, make it interesting to read, or listen or see, make sure that, you know, they're really expressing and showing the purpose of the project, why the founder started it, how is it going to change the world, why is there a blockchain involved, and all those questions that really come into a place where you hear about a new project. I think it's extremely important to really listen and understand part. It's all about the team when it comes to choosing a successful project. And I think it's super important to really listen and get personal and conversational with the founders of the project. And you really you really understand them deeply, and you really understand why they're doing it. And it really creates an interesting story.
So what can a company do before they come to you to make your job as easy as possible? What makes for the best basis for a company to start on before potentially getting all of that exposure. So what is the foundation that a good crypto company can have that lets them cut out the noise from all the rest?
Yeah, of course, to be honest with you, we can start with some of the projects that we work with. They didn't have much exposure at all. They're very fresh, where the others have a solid community exposure, and they're, you know, they've been speakers at conferences and do all sorts of things. But I think it's extremely important just to at least have an idea, what are the goals for your company? What are you guys doing? You have a very clear picture of what you're doing, because once we're going to start asking you questions and creating interesting content, what are the news? How are you going to change this world? Have a very clear picture. And if you don't, we can help you structure, but it's extremely important for the founders to have a very clear idea and hopefully the product that's in the process of building to get you up there, to really have a reader, to have community believe in you and support you and help you in your goals.
So for the people that are listening, what would you leave them with if they're maybe someone founding a company interested in getting some PR, or if they're just a listener hoping to find the next good project to look at? What would you leave them with?
Oh, of course. So first of all, never be afraid. And I found a blockchain is extremely welcoming space. If any of you want to start a company in this space, just go for it. Figure out what you're good at. Space, it welcomes all sorts of backgrounds. So just find your niche and just do it. You're going to learn from your mistakes. No, it's never perfect. But over time, you're going to learn. And I think it's super important to just follow your dreams and never give up. And just we welcome you all. And hopefully, if whoever needs PR, we're always welcome. You can find us on www.cryptoprlab.com or email me directly at alexandra@cryptoprlab. And I'm looking forward to hearing from all of you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it was a beautiful piece of parting wisdom. And as you can see, the crypto folks get very excited about this stuff, and we're doing it live. So thank you for listening, and I encourage you guys to check her out and check out their website. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
Hey, guys. We're here with Paul Rogers, the CEO and founder of Prime My Body. They're doing their token sale right now, so if you could just introduce a little bit about yourself and the company, that'd be great.
Sure. Love to. It's great to be on. We're a hemp oil company. We started with our special product in, I guess it was October of 2016, and we started exploding at that point, and went through a lot of issues with banks and processing in the United States.
Yeah.
You know, because the weird thing was with hemp is that the senators signed into law in the 2014 Farm Bill Act, they said hemp is legal. Hemp is legal to sell. But strangely enough, the DEA didn't agree with that. So the DEA came out with different opinions, although the DEA doesn't write the laws.
Yeah.
You're supposed to enforce the laws.
You'd think. Yeah.
You would think. But they came out with a different opinion in December of 2016, and it scared all the banks in the United States.
Yeah.
So nobody wanted to process, even though we don't have THC in our hemp oil.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, technically it's called undetectable levels of THC. Okay. You can't find it even with the most sophisticated study. But even with that, the DEA still considered hemp oil. They've changed their opinion a little bit now, but they considered it basically in the same class as like cocaine and heroin and methamphetamine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just ridiculous, but
no medical benefit.
Yeah. And, so scared all the banks. And so it was brutal finishing out 2016, going through 2017, couldn't get any banks to handle us in the United States.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have a bank to go through, you can't get Visa or MasterCard. And it's kind of hard to do e-commerce without Visa or MasterCard. So we had to really hustle. We had to find banks in Canada that would work with us, Mexico, the UK. Mm-hmm. And it took a lot of work. We were still able to do around 20 million in sales in 2017 through all of that. But they still consider us high risk. So we pay higher fees than most people do, even have to deal with reserves still. And that is what got us motivated to look at creating our own token, which I can talk about how the token will help solve especially the merchant issues initially. It'll at least give people a great option. And then it'll also help as we start paying people globally in our global commissions.
So with most of your clients so far, have they been mostly stateside? Are you even able to ship internationally? How have you dealt with some of the legal loopholes? Because I know there is a difference between, like you said, hemp-derived and actually marijuana-derived.
Yeah.
And that being said, do you expect the legalization of marijuana to cut into your business, or do you expect to also derive from marijuana?
I think it would help. I mean, I don't spend any time, you know, advocating or pushing for medical marijuana just because I'm so busy doing that with hemp oil.
Yeah.
And they're really so distinct, both of them. It certainly helps us. If a state says, yeah, we're going to legalize marijuana, then typically, obviously, we don't have any issues with hemp. But the reality is that we ship into all 50 states and have. Occasionally, a state will tell us to tweak this on the label or do, you know, small little things. But so far, since 2016, we've been able to ship into all 50 states, as well as Puerto Rico and Guam. And we haven't had any slowdowns. Few short-term stuff that we had to deal with, because the states recognize that the federal government said it's legal, but each state has the right to impose their own, you know, tariff and their own taxes, their own regulations concerning it. But so far, we've been very proactive on the political side, because you have to be. And I hate spending my time there, but it's a necessity.
Yeah.
And now we're in the process of opening Japan because it's legal there now. Taiwan, it's legal. Canada, it becomes legal in about a week. And then Mexico, it's legal. We're moving into Mexico. And then next year, Europe.
Awesome. I mean, I know even hemp-derived plastics, there's huge industries all around hemp. So
yes.
Are you guys focused, you know, mostly on the CBD side? Are you opening up into any other products? How is your go-to-market strategy in that respect?
We've stayed really focused on the hemp oil as a dietary supplement or as a food, and what it can do for a human's health, for the health of the brain, the health of the heart, the health of the stomach. And that's really been our focus. I love seeing, because you're right, hemp for so many years before it was banned in 1937,
yeah.
You know.
Reefer madness.
Yeah, the U.S. government. And, I mean, it's better than cotton in many ways. Mm-hmm. I hate to put down cotton manufacturers because I love cotton.
Yeah,
we all do. But it's amazing for clothing. You're right. It's amazing what you can, all the various uses of hemp. So I'm a huge proponent of that. They're never going to be a big part of my business model, other than I support pretty much every legal use of the hemp plant.
So tell us a little bit about the token, how you came to that conclusion. Were you considering other things prior? What led to that decision?
It was really looking at a token and crypto as a form of currency that we could use instead of or beside Visa or MasterCard to give people an option. And something I'd actually looked at about a year and a half ago. And I felt like because we're a real company with a real product and real sales, I felt it was a year and a half ago, it was too early to adopt it. It was like the Wild Wild West, yep. You know. Everybody was launching a token. Everybody was doing an ICO. None of them had any real businesses. It was all pre-revenue. It was all theory.
Yeah, they're crowdfunding.
That's exactly it. I'm going to mention that tonight. It was just crypto crowdfunding and hoping that they could then develop something real. And so that scared me. That part of the crypto world scared me back then. But then I started looking at it again probably about 8 months ago, and I saw that a lot of those had gotten weeded out. And the crypto market was starting to mature and wanted to move into more of a stable environment. And you had institutional investors and Wall Street looking at it and Goldman Sachs. And I just felt that it's a time to, one, launch our own token instead of latching on to other crypto. I mean, you could use Ether or Bitcoin Cash. But instead of just doing that, felt it's an opportunity to brand our own token and do a private sell for our affiliates to purchase the token, and then they can use that token to purchase product. And then I also, in 2019, will start using crypto to pay commissions to people on a global scale. It just seemed like the perfect time that a lot of the weird stuff had taken place already with token sales and ICOs. It seemed like a great time for a real company with real product, with real revenue, with real structure to come in and embrace it. Not like the crypto world needed me to embrace it. Not at all. It didn't. It'd be just fine on its own. But for me, it looked like this token could really help us solve a lot of problems.
And it could open up investment to an entire class of people who in an IPO probably wouldn't have had access. They're not the first in the door, but with Reg A, you have all these people who can actually get in the door. So, you know, ICOing more like an IPO, I think, makes a lot of sense. So when you were talking about creating the ICO, are you doing a securitized offering? How did you navigate the regulatory landscape?
I spent a lot of time doing that because since we did have a real company with real revenue, I didn't want to do anything to endanger that. Yeah. And so we looked at all of them. We looked at the, well, it hadn't even really been established yet, but the ever-changing laws regarding security tokens. That scared me, you know, because they could change their mind. I know that firsthand because I've actually been president, part of taking a company that I retired from in 2008. We took it onto the NASDAQ. And so I know the publicly traded world pretty well. Yeah. I was president and I was always focused more on sales. So I'm certainly not the finance guy, but I know going public pretty well. And I also know that Sarbanes-Oxley would add 150 pages to every quarter that we had to do, audit it. And so for our 10Q to complete that in our 10K, even in the highly regulated world of being a publicly traded company, the rules are constantly changing and it's grossly expensive to live in that world. Yeah. About $3.5 million for most companies that are on the NASDAQ on a yearly basis, which is stupid. So we looked at security and didn't really feel that we fit the model of security. We looked at utility. We're not a utility token. So we decided that we felt that we could defend ourselves as an asset-backed token. Because we're doing a private sale, because we're not taking fiat, not taking dollars, the affiliate will purchase it, and at a minimum purchase price is one Ether. And that token was then going to be used specifically for buying the ability to buy product and the ability for us to pay commissions. And being tied to a real company with a real product that people could touch and feel, a lot of lawyers came back and we determined, okay, this is the definition of an asset-backed token as opposed to a security or a utility.
So what would be your parting message for people who are listening? Would you like them, you know, to buy tokens, to check out your products? You know, what is your primary driver here?
And I always say that we're a hemp company, not a token company. I mean, I'm not a crypto company. I'm not. You know, we're developing our token to solve some serious needs. So first and foremost, Iron Hemp Oil is changing people's lives. So become an affiliate to try it. You don't have to build a business, but become a customer. Use the product.
I'll try some.
Yeah, do that. And then if you choose to participate in the token sale starts on November 21st. You have to be an affiliate to do it. Then great. Come on board, purchase the token. But first and foremost, get some hemp and see what it'll do for your life.
Well, that sounds great. I look forward to trying it. And thank you so much for coming on. And we'll make sure you guys have the links and everything to go check it out.
Cool. Appreciate it very much.
Great. Hey, guys. I'm here with Timothy Lewis. He is the co-founder of Ikigai. Did I pronounce that right?
Ikigai. It's a 1,200-year-old Japanese term.
Well, could you actually? I'd love to hear about the origin of it.
So it's the center of what you're good at, what you love doing, what the world needs, and what you get paid for.
Wow,
it's very,
beautiful.
Very similar to the reason for being, raison d'être, a French word. But it really encapsulates everything that we do in this industry for the love of the humanity and tech and all the changes that it might bring about the world.
So could you tell us a little bit about what you've done in this industry, how it attracted you, and
what you hope it becomes?
Sure. I've been in the cypher scene since 1992. I've been building out communication protocols since I was 7, and I'm going to date myself. That's 1985. So I'm building out BBSs, and I owned my first ISP when I was 13. I started working on a lot of internet protocol work, including BGP work, at 14, 15, 16. Did a bunch of work for three-letter government agencies in the meantime. Graduated to doing a bunch of work for banks during the HFT craze of the early 2000s. So I spent a lot of time in Chicago working for offshoots of Societe Generale, FEMAT Financial, Calyon Financial. And I found I discovered Bitcoin through a coworker of mine in 2009. I really didn't catch the bug until about 2012, 2013, when we started seeing these semi-Turing-complete, Byzantine fault-tolerant programmatic blockchains. That's when I really started to get it. I found myself knee-deep in mining and doing things on the Ethereum network early, participating in the crowd sale there. And then along the way, it's just gotten, builds up steam. More and more people started to get involved. A lot of my friends kind of created the models that are the ICO models of what is today. I was a part of a syndicate named DNA and worked a lot doing advisory and consulting for now what is thousands of these things.
Yeah.
And it's been a lot of fun.
So what are the most exciting projects that you've worked on or that you see coming to fruition right now?
Well, I worked a lot on the on EOS and launching EOS. One of the top 21 block producers. Most of the time, it's a voting cycle. It's delegated, so it's a lot of fun. I run the block producer named Liberty Block. So we did a lot of the security work during the launch and spent a lot of time making sure a lot of the producers themselves were secure in their measures. A lot of them aren't sysadmins. I myself am a dev sysadmin, data expediency expert. Not everyone in this quote-unquote industry came from the networking, development, systems engineering background. And as we start to build on to that, more and more coming. More of my old friends are joining. But, building that out and seeing some of the projects that are getting launched on there now is a big focus of ours. So we go around the world doing a lot of block producer summits, talking to different people about their products, their dApps, or what I call TAPs. Instead of decentralized applications, most of these things are just tokenized applications, which is a difference.
Yeah.
But that project is great and it's going well. It's a great experiment. I'm also excited about Hashgraph. So working on that. But in the middle of this, we've been launching our fund, Ikigai. Ikigai, I'm super proud of. I think we have one of the most institutionally compliant vehicles in the industry. And as this industry kind of grows up, and in the beginning of almost every part of new technology, you have the tinkerers, the hacks, the drug dealers in this case, right? And so now we're moving on. Our phase two was like some people starting to get together, experimenting more on the Ethereum network, trying to get things going. But generally, nothing has returned anything. Most of the projects are crap and no one's using it.
Yeah.
But in this third wave, we have real people that have come from real industries, engineering, are really starting to understand that this technology has a use. And we're starting to understand what some of those uses might be. And at the same time, a lot of these new platforms are creating the possibility that they might be usable in these public distributed ledgers the way that we hope that they might be. So getting in behind some of those projects and working on all of those things is what drives me right now.
So how has your technical background prepared you for some of the investments you've made? And also, how has it helped you decide, which horses to bet on and helped you, understand the nitty-gritty that most people don't? What are most people getting wrong in that aspect?
No, so I think that, being a dev, first and foremost, is the best tool that you can to understanding new technologies, right? When we're developing, you have to understand the underlying aspects of the developer, being able to read code and see whether or not they're a sloppy developer, whether or not there's a depth to their content.
It's a fork that innovative,
Exactly, and they're not.
Copy-pasting.
Exactly, copy-pasta, that's all that it is. And ultimately, seeing those during the attack of the alts, it was all garbage, not seeing much real innovation other than things like Monero and Dash, or there were a couple of the quote-unquote cryptocurrencies that I think were interesting. But now that we have these semi-Turing complete programmatic blockchains, those are getting really interesting. And seeing some of the really great dev teams that have been brought on, especially seeing it from all around the world. Now I get to go out and go find dev teams in Ukraine and Seoul, Korea and Singapore and Hong Kong and Shanghai, and all around the world, and being able to connect with them as someone who understands problems that they've had before, want to solve or move on. I still dev, like, and I've got a dev team now. Now I have an enterprise development team that I work with the exchanges. So part of what I do is relationships. And the more that I can do for key players in the industry, the more that I can help the people that I invest in. You know, we did try to kind of destroy the idea of the VC, but some things that the VCs did bring sometimes were relationships and were the ability to help you mold your business. I still think that's important. So working along those lines as a developer, I can relate to the developers, understand needs from the developer, but also from a businessman, I can now understand the needs of the exchanges and different key players within this atmosphere, and being able to place people together is what I specialize at.
So what are the biggest problems that you've seen that you would like to invest in that have yet to be solved, that you see the biggest barriers?
Well, no one's using any of this shit. We got to get off of the PKI infrastructure, right? Yeah. So, you know, you have to have accounts that are semi-recoverable. Different networks are going to be useful for different things. A lot of people, again, I am not a maximalist. I stopped being a maximalist sometime in 2012. And the idea that there's a winner take all, I think, is ridiculous. So, you know, you're going to have, it's a good idea to have experimentation. Getting over, as an industry, getting over the, we have this brutal loyalty to one chain, whatever it is. We got to get over that.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one thing that's holding everybody back, because there are, who knows, like, you know, if you were looking in 1991, you'd have thought CompuServe was running the world because they had the network that everyone was using, because no one had been using. Everyone had come from Prodigy and jumped on CompuServe, and it's like, that's the new thing. It's going to last forever.
Yeah.
And then came AOL, right? And AOL was this massive engine that everyone was using. So the protocols, they're not done yet.
Yeah.
You know, some of them will stick around forever. I mean, ideally, Bitcoin is something that we can all corner on, and it's really the only true currency. So I really do hope that that's the one that really does permeate and stay. But aside from that, maybe one other privacy coin. There are going to be many of these utility networks that pop up. And so we don't know which will be the ones that people use. They won't always stay in favor. They'll always be around. But I can see different networks being different, good for different things. But hopefully everyone else is smart enough to use all the networks and understand the thing that they're building might have some, get some influence from other networks.
So what would be your parting wisdom to the amateur investor who's coming into this with very little technical background and maybe very little investing background?
Stop investing in tokens. Okay. Start investing in equity. I think that's the only responsible thing, or a shared aspect of both of them. You know, we're about to go through the onslaught of the STOs. Don't get afraid when things aren't decentralized, because we're not going to be decentralized for a while, period. We're going to go through this area of permissioned networks, and that's going to be okay. But I think of this as the Trojan horse approach to destroying every government in the world, and that's the ultimate goal, right? But we can't go out and tell them that's the goal. We have to play nice with their regulators, allow us to create systems that fully match their regulatory parameters and think that everything's okay. And then 5 years later, don't worry, we'll fuck them up. There will be cross-chain actions that they can't stop, and we'll be able to do all the things that we want to do. It's going to take a while. But as an investor, if you are an investor, you know, again, try to add value. Don't just invest in tokens. Tokens, for the most part, are going to fail. So try to make sure that you're working on equity pieces. Try to make sure that you're demanding some responsibility from your engineering teams. I think that's important. And try to make the connections for the engineers that they find useful.
Perfect. Well, is there anything you'd like to end on? Any shameless plugs?
You know, I guess vote for Liberty Block. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to plug ikigai.fund. Legally, I'm not sure.
Okay.
We'll have to talk to them. We'll have to talk to the people. Make sure, only because no public solicitations, right? But it's for accredited investors. It's a really interesting thing that we've built. I'd say this: Google Ikigai Hedge Fund. So go check that out. My partner Travis Kling is a beast. My partner Anthony Entman's a beast. And I think the end of 2018, early 2019, we're going to start coming back. These bear markets always happen. We always rebound to bulls. This technology is undeniable. Find the right engineers. Find the right projects. Get involved.
Well, you heard it here first, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Anyway,
cool.
All right, guys, so I'm here with Justin Wu. Justin, if you could maybe just give us a quick introduction about your background.
Awesome.
And Justin is the founder and CEO of CoinState. Are you CEO?
Yeah, I'm CEO of CoinState.
Just want to make sure.
Yeah, so CoinState, we are kind of like a media slash community brand. We're all focused about building brand, community, and growth for blockchain projects. A lot of people, a lot of projects out there don't really know how to communicate and even like maintain their community. And so we're kind of building more organic ways for these companies, whether it be dApps, some non-fungible games as well, and then looking on beyond with some STOs and stablecoins to kind of help get their message out there as well. So a few other things too, just like hosted the first Seattle Blockchain Conference, Blockchain Northwest. We had good, amazing people there from like Boeing, Amazon, Starbucks, Bittrex come through. And then also hosting another, you know, a few events in Vancouver, BC, a little bit in Portland, and Phoenix. So right now it's just heavily on the West Coast, but we're looking to kind of expand it out into kind of areas that are not in the major crypto zones like LA, San Francisco, and New York. I think there's a lot of events over there, but there's a lot of interesting things happening within both the development community and little hubs all around the world. So I always like working with kind of emerging markets and emerging cities, bridge gas, bring people from different regions into those zones to help level up the people locally and just connect people there to help push forward with this blockchain movement.
So you've done a lot of traveling internationally. You've seen the lay of the land.
Yeah.
What could you say about how things are developing in different parts of the world?
Yeah, for sure. So I've been to Nomad since probably like right before Consensus New York. Was in New York for a couple months, did the New York thing, take a look and see how it went there. And then I went to Asia for 3 months. Went to like all the major places from Singapore, Tokyo, Seoul, Hong Kong, Shanghai, and beyond. And I need to make my way over to Europe. But it's been interesting to see kind of the crypto movements all across there. And even in this bear market, there's still a lot of excitement and energy going on. And you're talking about like still super packed conferences out there. And what's different now too is a couple months ago, like Southeast Asia, I'm talking about like Indonesia, Thailand, Vietnam, Philippines, they just discovered crypto finally too, and about blockchain, and they're finally participating, which they weren't here during like even the bull run back then. So to me, you know, it's really exciting to see kind of how each country is reacting. China obviously banning all the crypto events. Japan still putting high regulations. Singapore has regulations, but they're kind of like softening up a little bit. And then Korea is already working on like an ICO bill to bring back ICOs too. So I think everybody's kind of like looking at each other to try to figure out what the good framework is. And I think the one that's really leading the charge is obviously Malta. So I'm looking forward to go to Malta Summit next week. There's going to be like 8,000 attendees there. I want to see the forefront of what's actually happening there. And I think that all the other governments are trying to work hand in hand with all these other jurisdictions to have a guideline and figure out how that fits in their own ecosystem and economy. So,
yeah, and it seems like the will of the people is pushing these governments in the direction. You know, they don't want it necessarily in a lot of cases.
Especially Korea. When Korea banned crypto, there was a huge petition. There was like a huge stat, like 30, 40% of people actually own crypto in the population. So that's insane, you know. And they were just saying that you can't ban crypto, and they just couldn't do it. Like the people rose over everywhere else too. So
I think it was the finance minister of Russia said blockchain will belong to Russia. So have you seen anything in Russia that suggests, you know, they're heavily investing? Have you traveled over there to see?
I've not been to Russia quite yet, so we'll have to see.
It seems to be happening in somewhat of a vacuum, so you don't talk to too many people who really know what's going on and how things are hashing out over there, which is interesting.
Yeah, I heard a lot of projects there, but you know, also too, there's just been, you know, it's still new territory. I haven't made my way around there or as heavily in Europe quite yet, so that's kind of like the next phase for me looking at 2019 as well.
So what has crypto done to a country like Malta? I mean, I've been to Gibraltar, and I know Gibraltar was just a rock in the ocean, and now it's, you know, an economic
the big rock too.
So how does that factor into these countries?
Yeah, I think Malta has the full support of the prime minister and the government. There's banking a lot there as well. So what's happening now, it's Binance, OKX, I think Hobi, Bittrex. They're all opening offices there now, and a lot of people are acquiring banks over there. as well as people trying to set up these STO exchanges and try to build, I guess, a base out of there. I think that since the country itself is very relaxed, it gives a lot of protection and a lot of people able to sleep at night to know that they're not going to be chased down or trying to constantly just fend off all these like SEC subpoenas, and that's super costly. So it's just, you know, I think that right now it just really doesn't make sense to be in the States to work on a blockchain project, to be honest. And we saw people like Michael Arrington just like peace out as well. And I think that we're seeing a lot of that as well. People moving to, if you're going to Asia, a lot of people just doing Singapore, even though it's still not the best, but it's the best kind of choice for now in Asia. But it's still, you know, still early to say which country is going to be fruitful. And I think that, you know, more power to the countries that will honor it first and allow for people to develop more. You know, Korea is opening up a few new economic cities developed around blockchain too. So we'll have to see what the future holds. But right now, America, I think, is still going to play an important part for blockchain and crypto. It's just going to be full-on STOs. They're going to put full regulations for Wall Street and institutions. And that's going to make the big brands fully comfortable. And America is just going to lead with the sheer force of Wall Street and big brands. And then the utility tokens, consumer tokens, are going to be elsewhere outside on the fringes until we get some more clarity on that front. But I think that with something like a T0 and Overstock and NASDAQ with BACT, a New York Stock Exchange with BACT, and TD, Ameritrade, and Goldman, and everybody, I think they're going to just going to force in hand to force STOs first. And that's going to happen sooner or later because they're just lining everything up for the infrastructure to build the software for it. And then they obviously want clarity so that all the floodgates of money can come right in, pouring into stable coins and then STO exchanges as well.
So that being said, if you were looking at more international projects, what are some of the best international companies that people may not have heard of if they aren't, you know, if they are in the United States?
It's hard to say. It was interesting to see one of the biggest, actually the biggest Korean fund Hashed out there at San Francisco Blockchain Week. They launched a lot of really big projects out there, but they themselves barely invested in Korean ICOs and projects. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that. I think that just because a country or a zone has massive volume, like 1/3 or 30%, right, or so, doesn't mean and translate that they're actually heavy on blockchain development, smart contract developers and platform developers at all. Same thing with San Francisco, just because there's a big boom there. They just finally discovered and cared about crypto just recently, especially with all the funds out there building their own crypto arm. So I think there's a huge delay. And that's what's also what's causing a big delay on mass adoption and use cases. And, you know, it's hard to say, well, like international projects, because like there's a lot of projects here, at least in the States, that have U.S. founders, but they're just offshore and selling their ICOs or STOs offshore and no U.S. Citizens at all. So it's been interesting. But when I was in Asia, it's a little hard to decipher some of these projects because some of them are just like very localized to their own region or their own app and company. So it's hard to tell how they would have a huge go-to-market strategy in a global crypto market, which I don't think there really is. And it's just going to go back to the same issue where it's a small regional peg utility token, which has questionable utility to begin with. You don't really see as much global and big projects yet, except like those big platforms like Neo, VeChain, Zilliqa, and a few other ones out there, but they're still not fully proven quite yet. And, you know, we'll see how the dice rolls on those as well. And one thing I want to add there too, is that there are really big projects out there still raising like 100 mil, 50 to 100 mil, but they're going to take 2 to 3 years from now to actually launch their like mainnet, similar to like Golem or Augur that took years to build. Some of them are just super ambitious products like video coin to like base coin to origin protocol and beyond, and they just go and raise some huge money doing some crazy hard future tech or decentralized storage or decentralized computing and rendering, and they're all main concepts that have yet to be proven, And that's going to take years to develop, even the testnet to mainnet as well. So they're all sleeper projects, and they only care about building right now, and you don't see them out at any conference. They're still getting big checks and big funds to allocate to them. Telegram, still silent. They raised their $2 million as well, and who knows when that's going to come out as well. And then Hashgraph finally starting to make waves. So there's some super projects out there that have yet to be seen, and I think that they're just really still focusing on trying to build and test out their thesis, I should say.
So what do you think the biggest problems are that have yet to be solved in this space, and what sort of companies would you be looking at to solve them? So if I was an investor, what should I be looking at?
Honestly, like as with any new emerging frontier technology or market, it's always a B2B to C game, meaning business to business before consumers, and it trickles down. And I think that's what happened here is like we jumped all to try to go for all consumer apps when blockchain, Ethereum, Bitcoin, Ethereum, not fully scalable yet. A few other platforms still has potential consensus or not even consensus, like constitution issues out there as well. So it was a big jump ahead to try to jump into consumer applications. But it wasn't really about consumer applications. It was all about like trying to make money and showing and everything. So it was about like consumer greed more than anything. So right now, you know, what we're seeing is again like infrastructure year this year, a lot of big announcements by big money, big banks. Unfortunately, I think with the way that everything's trending with stable coins, every bank might have their own stable coins. There's 100 stable coins out there right now. Everybody's announced their own exchange now or wallet or teamed up one or acquiring. You're going to see a lot of mergers and acquisitions from some big players out of there as well. And I think that it's gravitating towards big banks, big money, big corps coming in and just building these big monster infrastructure applications and then start combating and punching each other. So we're going to see a lot of that. And I think that's like the biggest issue is just like we all jump trying to consumer head, whereas we need the infrastructure from some big brands and big players that actually have big money involved or big brands, big customers using blockchain. And now we're finally seeing some private blockchain projects actually go into live production, like IBM with Walmart, with the food chain and Solid, tracking that throughout. But what that has proven, though, is that you can do a whole supply chain blockchain without a token in an ICO and get people to use it. And so that's like the big kind of illusion that we all thought that you needed a token to actually build the blockchain, and you really didn't. And I think that's going to prove that you don't need to.
You think that's bad news for all the smaller companies?
Because like it's proving that you can build a blockchain, and blockchain could prove inefficiencies and increase efficiencies, but it doesn't have any real like token economy or token economics per se. You don't need a. It's just getting everybody to contribute to that supply chain. Obviously, maybe they might want people to stake some sort of and have oracles to audit everybody that's part of those chains, but it's yet to be seen. But it just proves that you can still run a blockchain project, and blockchain can help efficiency without an ICO or a token, which then kind of screws over the whole crypto side because that doesn't move the Bitcoin price or crypto price at all, except confidence in blockchain. But you know, I think that will come first. You're going to see a lot of private blockchains go invisible, increase efficiencies, gain more trust from institutions, even execs or C-level executives. They're all trying to warm up to them, and then that will trickle down into people adopting it more into more consumer apps and fintech and like a Venmo level type of applications, and then that should then hopefully help with consumer level applications. That's my thoughts on that.
Well, I'm excited to see how it shakes out. Thank you so much for being here.
Appreciate no worries.
Any
always good.
Parting thoughts or plugs or wisdom?
I think the first killer apps besides like Vice subjects or Vice industries is going to be probably gaming. Gaming's always been super hot, and especially how like Korea's responded to both gaming, gambling, and esports. You know, it's always been forefront in consumer adoption. So I'm really bullish to see how the gaming space will evolve and adopt crypto. I think that it's not going to be a full decentralized model. It doesn't fully make sense for companies
crypto
to fully, Well, it just doesn't allow for companies, it doesn't make sense for a game publisher or brand to really unleash all their IP and have full-on ownership for everybody out there, because there's no money for them or incentives to them. So it's going to be kind of like a quasi or like a little semi-centralized, something more like something that makes sense is like something like crypto, but more of a closed platform. I mean, security tokens and STOs are going to be like that. You can't trade it off unregulated platforms, right? And I think that the gaming industry will probably gravitate more in that direction. There might be a few marketplaces out there, but you can't really exit out of that for full ownership, kind of like digital rights management out there. So it's going to be more like a Steam, Steam platform type of out there. And I think that maybe EA Games to Activision will each have their own kind of mini ecosystems and their own quote-unquote non-fungible tokens or digital assets they can move around. And they kind of already do with like Skylanders and like Amiibos.
Yeah,
that's a good example of a kind of like a NFT-ish. And so we're going to see more of that. And I think that I love out games. So
you got mining hardware built right in too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All the gamers leading on that side.
Yeah, GPU you mining, get all so. Those gamers on board. Yeah. You run your
Yeah. Network. You know, I think that, you know, we just need more people focusing on the tech and just building. I think that we're just all caught up with the price and noise, and it's all good. Crypto is always not going to leave us. I think that each wave, each spike will then generate more jobs, more interests, and just further along the whole industry. So just bullish overall, especially with how everything's developing.
Yeah, so like any disruptive industry, they're going to be winners and losers for a little
while.
Yeah,
winners and losers, but as long as you keep contributing and building, then you should make it out on the other side.
Yep, exactly. So, well,
yeah, thanks again.
Yeah, thank you.